to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Let me start with a question, which is this. How many of you have had to fill out some sort of web form where you've been asked to read a distorted sequence of characters like this one? How many of you found it really, really annoying? Outstanding. Okay, so I was one of the people who invented that. That thing is called a CAPTCHA. And the reason is there is to make sure that you, the entity filling out the form, are actually a human and not some sort of computer program that was written to submit the form millions and millions of times. And the reason it works is because humans, at least non-visually impaired humans, have no trouble reading these distorted squiggly characters, whereas computer programs can't do it as well yet. So for example, in the case of Ticketmaster, the reason you have to type these squiggly characters whenever you buy tickets online is to prevent scalpers from writing a program to buy millions of tickets two at a time. And the reason it works is because computers can't read these very well. Now, these things are used all over the internet, and since they're used so often, a lot of times the precise sequence of random characters that are shown to the user is not so fortunate. So for example, this is called a CAPTCHA. This is a screenshot from the Yahoo registration form where the random characters, these were supposed to be random characters were shown to the user, happened to be WAIT, which of course spell a word. Now, the funny thing here is the help message that the Yahoo help desk got about 20 minutes after this was presented. So the person thought they had to wait. This, of course, is not as bad as this poor person who restarted their computer. Okay, so CAPTCHAs are used over the internet. They have all kinds of applications, and I could spend the next hour talking about all the different applications, but since I don't want to do that, let me illustrate one of the applications through a little story. It's that the following. A few years ago, Slashdot, which is a very popular site for nerds like me, put up this poll asking, which is the best computer science graduate school in the United States? Now, if you think about it for like longer than a second, you'll realize that this is a very dangerous question to ask over the internet. Because as soon as the poll went up, students at Carnegie Mellon wrote a program that voted for Carnegie Mellon millions and millions of times. The next day, students at MIT wrote their own program. And a few days later, the poll had to be taken down because both CMU and MIT had more than 6 billion votes. And every other school had less than 1,000. I guess if you think about it, the poll did exactly what it was supposed to do. But in general, we simply cannot trust the results of an online poll because anybody could just write a program to vote for their favorite option. Now, one possible solution against this is to use a CAPTCHA to make sure that only humans can vote. Okay, so that's one application of CAPTCHAs. Here's another application of CAPTCHAs in free email services. That's probably where most of you have seen them. There's a lot of companies out there that offer free email services, so like Yahoo, Google, Microsoft, etc. They offer free email services. And up until a few years ago, they were all suffering from a very specific type of attack. And it was people who wrote programs to obtain millions and millions of email accounts every day. And the people who wrote these programs were spammers. So here's the thing. If you're a spammer, it's actually quite worthwhile to send spam from, say, at yahoo.com, because nobody's going to block all of yahoo.com, right? So it's quite worthwhile to send spam from them. But the problem that you run into, if you're such a spammer, is that each Yahoo account only allows you to send like 100 messages a day, some set number. And if you want to send 100 million messages per day, which is what spammers would like to send, they need to obtain millions of email accounts, each of which they can use to send, you know, 10 messages. So this is why spammers wrote programs to obtain these accounts. And the solution, and this is what we originally suggested to Yahoo like 10 years ago, was to start using a CAPTCHA to make sure that only humans can obtain free email accounts. Okay, so in general, CAPTCHAs are used to stop spammers from doing bad things on the internet. Now, of course, spammers on their side have started coming up with all kinds of dirty hacks to get around the CAPTCHAs that are being used in practice. I'm sure you've heard about a few of them. Let me explain it to you. There was an article in the New York Times yesterday about one of them. Here's this one. This is what the article in the New York Times covered. They're called CAPTCHA sweatshops. So spam companies have actually started hiring humans to type CAPTCHAs all day long. This is currently happening. It's usually happening in other countries, like India, China, and Bangladesh, where the minimum wage is a lot lower. So it's currently happening. There's at least two consolations. So first, it's at least costing them some. So whereas before they could get millions of email accounts for free, now they have to pay a fraction of a cent per account, so they can't get that many. Second, if you think about it, CAPTCHAs are actually generating jobs in underdeveloped countries. Okay, so I'm running for president soon. okay, so that's one dirty hack. Let me show you an even dirtier one that I'm sure also some of you have heard about. This is what some pornography companies have started doing. Okay, so in case you didn't know, there's pornography on the internet. And these pornography companies, they also would like to send spam. So here's how some of them are doing this. So imagine there's a pornography company that would like to send spam from Yahoo accounts. Okay, so they would like to obtain millions of Yahoo accounts from which they can send spam. So what they do is they write a program that fills out the entire registration form at Yahoo. Now, whenever this program gets to the CAPTCHA, it can't read it. So what it does is it copies the CAPTCHA back to the porn page. Now, back at the porn page, there's a lot of people looking at pornography. And suddenly, one of them gets this screen saying, hey, if you want to see the next pornographic image or pornographic video, you got to type the word that's in the box below. And you know what people do? They type the word as fast as possible. And by doing so, they are effectively solving the CAPTCHA for the porn company. That is, they are effectively obtaining an email account that the porn company can later use to spam you. Okay, so these pornographers are very smart. I keep on telling people. Okay, so another thing that I like to show when I talk about CAPTCHAs is different versions of CAPTCHAs. So the idea of a CAPTCHA is a lot more general. Most of you have just seen these squiggly characters that you have to type. But the idea is a lot more general. The idea is just a test that humans can pass, but computers cannot. Okay, so the question is, so let me show you some different types of tests that are made such that most humans can pass them, but computers cannot. So different people have made up different tests just because they want to be different. Let me show you a couple of them. Okay, so here's one of them. This one started coming up in all kinds of Russian sites. We're going to call this the Russian CAPTCHA. That's what you have to do. This, of course, is a pretty crappy CAPTCHA, actually, because computers can actually do this. But it's funny to see that in Russia, they think that anybody could just solve a limit. I mean, this is supposed to be able to do it by everybody. It's funny to see that. Okay, so this is one that started coming up in Russian sites. Let me show you one that started coming up in all kinds of sites from India. This one, we're going to call this the Indian CAPTCHA. You have to analyze a circuit. Again, this is pretty crappy CAPTCHA because computers can actually do this. But again, funny to see that in India they think anybody could just analyze a circuit. Now, just to give you a comparison here. In Russia, you have to solve a limit. In India, you have to analyze a circuit. Let me show you a CAPTCHA that started coming up in all kinds of US-based blogs. We're going to call this the American CAPTCHA. I wish I was making this up. Okay, of course, computers can add, so this is also not a very good CAPTCHA, but it started happening.
Is that text 2 or 10?
That's a good question. This is text, so there's nothing. I mean, you don't even have to look at the image. That's just text. In the defense of these people, they're banking on the fact that they're so small that nobody wants to attack them directly. So if they just say, what is 1 plus 1, versus the next blog, if they just say, you know, add 1 plus 1, then maybe the computers can't figure that out. That's in their defense. So, okay. So let me move on to this next project, which is called ReCAPTCHA, which is closer to what I actually want to talk about in this talk. So this is a project that is not so new anymore. It used to be new like 2 years ago. So it's a project that we did about 2 years ago. It's called ReCAPTCHA. And it's sort of the next generation of CAPTCHAs. And the idea is the following. We started from this number. It turns out that if we just did a back of the envelope calculation, that if you just calculate how many CAPTCHAs are typed every day by people around the world, you get to a number of about 200 million. Okay, I type a CAPTCHA roughly once every 2 or 3 days. It turns out there's a lot of people like me. If you add it all up, it's like 200 million times a day. Now, when I first heard this number, I was really proud of myself. I thought, look at the impact that my research has had. But then I started feeling bad because the thing is, each time you type a CAPTCHA, essentially, you waste 10 seconds of your time. I mean, it takes about 10 seconds of your time to type a CAPTCHA. And if you multiply that by 200 million, you get that humanity as a whole is wasting like 500,000 hours every day typing these annoying CAPTCHAs. So then I started feeling bad. And then I started thinking, you know, what can we do about this? Of course, we can't just get rid of CAPTCHAs because the security of the web sort of depends on them. But then I started thinking, is there any way in which we can use this human effort for something that's good for humanity? See, the thing is, during those 10 seconds while you're typing a CAPTCHA, you're doing something amazing. Your brain is doing something that computers cannot yet do. okay, they're just reading these squiggly characters. So the question is, can we use that for something good? Another way of putting it is, there's some humongous problem that we cannot yet get computers to solve, such that we can split into tiny 10-second chunks, so that whenever somebody types a CAPTCHA, they solve a little bit of this problem. And the answer to that is yes, and this is what we're doing now with reCAPTCHA. So nowadays, when you type a CAPTCHA, not only are you authenticating yourself as a human, but in addition, you're helping us digitize books. Okay, so the idea is the following. There's a lot of projects out there trying to digitize books, like Google has one. Now Amazon has one where they're trying to digitize books for the Kindle. The Internet Archive has one. And the basic idea is, here's how they work. You start with an old book. You've seen them, right? Books. Yeah. Okay, so you start with an old book, and then you scan it. Now, scanning a book is like taking a digital photograph of every page of the book. It gives you an image for every page of the book. The next step in the process is that the computer needs to be able to decipher all of the characters in that photograph. That's so that you can search through it. That's done using a technology called OCR, for optical character recognition. The problem with OCR is that it's not perfect, especially for older books where the ink has faded. The computer just cannot recognize a lot of the text. So what we're doing now, just let me give you an example. For this image, if you run OCR on this image, you try to get the computer to recognize the text on this image, this is what you get. The errors are in yellow. And this is actually a pretty good scan. For things that were written before 1900, the year 1900, OCR cannot recognize like 30% of the words. So about one third of the words just cannot be recognized. They're done, you know, with errors. So what we're doing now is we're taking all the words that the computer cannot recognize, and we're getting people to read them for us while they're typing a CAPTCHA on the internet. Okay, so the idea is the following. Here's how it works. We start with a scanned book. Then we take all the words that OCR cannot recognize, that the computer cannot recognize. Now, how do we know which words cannot be recognized by OCR? It turns out there's a really cool trick to be able to do this. If you run multiple OCR engines on a book and they disagree with each other, that means they're probably one of them is wrong, or both are wrong. So we can figure out which words are actually not recognized by the computer pretty well. So we're going to take this, and we're going to use this as the basis for a CAPTCHA. Okay, notice this is perfect as a CAPTCHA because this is, by definition, a word that the computer could not recognize. Okay, so we're going to take this. We're going to distort it even more to make sure that the computer cannot recognize it, and we're going to use this as a CAPTCHA. So, for example, whenever somebody's typing, getting tickets on Ticketmaster, they're going to get this as a CAPTCHA, and whatever they type, we're going to use it to digitize books. Now, some of you may be wondering, how can we use this as a CAPTCHA if we don't know the answer for it? Okay, this is a word that we just took out of a book for which we didn't actually know what it was. And we're going to give it to a user, and it should be the case that if they type the word between, we let them through. But if they don't type the word between, we don't let them in. So how can we do that if we don't know the answer? The trick to this is, the solution, is that whenever we give a word for which we don't know the answer, for which the system doesn't know the answer, we're actually going to give it to the user along with another word, one for which the system does know the answer. Okay, so we're going to give people two words, one for which the system knows the answer, one for which it doesn't. We're not going to tell them which one's which, and we're going to say, please type both. And if they type the correct word for the one for which we already knew the answer, we assume they're human, and we also get some confidence that they typed the other word correctly. And if we repeat this process to like 10 different people, and they all agree that the new word is the word between, we get with overwhelmingly high confidence that this new word really is the word between. Okay, so that's the basic idea of how reCAPTCHA works. Any questions about this? Yes?
Yeah, I mean, you had an example where the became T-I period I.
Uh-huh. What's the problem?
Well, people will just type T-I period.
No, because for that one, we actually, so this is a very good question. So the idea is, let me go back to this example. So the became that, okay? But see, this we sort of knew, in fact, we already knew that this was wrong. So we're not going to listen, when we give it to people in this example, when we give it to people, this is going to be the unknown word. And we're not going to see what they type. We're not going to know what they type. If they all agree on T-I-L-E, then sure, it'll get wrong. But my guess is that won't happen. Yes?
Can the data be used to improve the OCR?
Yes, the data can be used to improve the OCR, and we are doing that. That is correct. Yes?
How do you choose the known word? I mean, are there other tricks to choosing the known word?
Yeah, there are a lot of tricks for choosing the known word. You want to make sure of a lot of things. And let me hold off for a couple of slides, and then I'll tell you how I choose that. Yes. Yes.
So how many books have you successfully?
That's a very good question. Let me hold off for a couple plus epsilon more slides, and let me tell you that. Okay, I'm going to go on because, okay, so basically what we did is a couple of years ago, we released this web service called ReCAPTCHA, where the idea is if you're a website like Facebook that needs CAPTCHAs to protect yourself against spam, you can come talk to us and we'll give you the CAPTCHAs for free. The only caveat is that we get to see what your users are typing, so we get to digitize books. Okay, and ever since we released this web service, a lot of websites have started using, switching from the old CAPTCHA, where people wasted the time, to the new CAPTCHA, where people are helping to digitize books. So for example, Facebook has switched, so every time you get a Facebook account or you poke somebody, you have to help digitize a book. Ticketmaster has switched, so every time you buy tickets, you help digitize the books. Craigslist, Twitter, and by now about 175,000 other sites have switched to using ReCAPTCHA. And in fact, the number of sites that are using ReCAPTCHA nowadays is so high that the number of words that we're doing per day is very large. This is an old graph, but by now we're doing, this is words digitized per day, but this is old. By now we're doing something like 70 million words per day by just having people type CAPTCHAs. And that's the equivalent of, it depends on what books you do, because some books are thicker than others and different things. And also older books require more CAPTCHAs because they're crappier. But it's the equivalent of something between 2 and 4 million books per year. So we're doing between 2 and 4 million books per year. Yes?
You're going to run out of...
books, yeah, books. When are we going to run out of books? Yeah, that's right. We've done the calculation, assuming that the growth rate continues, which I don't believe it will continue. Yeah. But assuming that the growth rate continues, we're going to run out of book in about 7 years. If the growth rate does not continue, it'll take more like 20 years.
Okay.
Is that because you can't digitize them fast enough, or that's just the number of books?
That's just the number of books. The total number of books is 100 million. Yeah. Yes?
What do you do with 18th century fonts where the S's are F's and so
forth? That's a very good question. Actually, it turns out that that's very easy to fix because you just know that the S's are F's. So if they type an F and you basically look at a lot of words in the dictionary that should actually have an S but they have an F, you realize, oh, this is an 18th century book, and then you switch all the F's to S's. And after that, there's a few of these things, and we just hard code them all, and it turns out that works.
We have a question from the back channel right here.
Yes.
You want to read it?
What is?
It's in here.
Oh, the. I don't want to read that out loud.
Okay, then don't answer it.
Okay, yeah, I can answer that. So the question is the following.
I'll read it out loud. Probably.
Okay, so.
Okay, someone asked Luis about the penis ReCAPTCHA spammers.
Yes, the penis ReCAPTCHA spammers. Here's what happened. I can tell you the story. This one, there's a website. I don't know how many of you have seen it. It's called 4chan. Yes, 4chan. Pretty awesome website. The founder of 4chan was actually voted the Time Person of the Year by the Internet Poll. And the way this happened is they cheated. And the way they cheated, I mean, he beat out like Barack Obama and everybody. It was crazy, right? This is a guy that nobody had ever heard of. And what happened is they cheated by doing exactly the same thing that CMU and MIT did for their poll. They were writing programs that just voted for this guy. His name is Moot. So they voted for Moot. Now, here's what happened. So they started writing a program that voted for Moot, and they got something like 32 million more votes than anybody else. And this poll wasn't getting that many votes, so it was killing everybody. And not only that, they had such control of the actual results that not only did they make Moot be number one, they ordered the first 16 results such that the letters of every single result spelled out marble cake. So they had such control. I mean, they completely were owning this thing. So at some point, Time actually, they called us. So Time magazine said, hey, turns out we're being attacked, and we put a CAPTCHA in there. And fine, so we helped them put a CAPTCHA. And after they put the CAPTCHA, it completely stopped them. But then these people from 4chan, which are pretty smart, they went and read our papers of how ReCAPTCHA works. And they realized that, well, one of the words is known, one of them is unknown. And actually, both words actually come from books. It's just, they both come from books. And both were originally unknown. It's just that one inductively became known because of the answers from previous times. So they figured, look, if we can figure out which one's known and which one's unknown by just looking at them, and we type the known one correctly, and we type penis for the other one, eventually all of the words in all books will be penis. So that's what they thought. It of course, completely did not work for two reasons. For the first one is they were good. I mean, we were doing, at that time, we were doing something like 40 million CAPTCHAs per day. And they were doing it by hand. It was a group of like, 20 kids doing it by hand. So it was a very tiny fraction of all our captures. There was no way they were going to be able to do that. And in addition to that, as soon as we saw that was happening, we put in, if penis, then ignore. So it didn't work, but it was very funny, these guys. Okay, and any other similar questions about penises? No. No, because we put that if penis, then ignore. They
work.
Yes?
If you randomly,
if you want to verify with random different, 10 random different users.
There was no way they were going to do that. Okay. There was no way they were going to do that. That's right. I mean, the probability that 10 different random users were going to be one of their set of 20 versus 40 million, I mean, that's just never going to happen, right? But it was very funny. And there was a lot of media coverage about that. And in fact, they claimed that it was going to eventually work. So there was a lot of media coverage claiming that eventually reCAPTCHA was going to be broken. But yes?
Does this mean that the word penis is missing from the CAPTCHA dictionary?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't I don't know what's happening with that. We really did literally put in the code, if penis, then ignore.
Is there a censorship lawsuit?
Okay, so but this... So the number of words that we're doing per day actually so high that this is somewhat related to this topic. The chances of funny things happening are actually now pretty high. This is especially true because now we're now giving people two randomly chosen words right next to each other. So of course, bad things can happen. So for example, we showed this word, which there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the word Christians. But if you show it along with another randomly chosen word right next to it, bad things can happen. So we showed this. But it's even worse because the particular website where we show this happened actually to be called the Embassy of the Kingdom of God. Here's another really bad one. It's johnedwards.com. Okay, so this brings me to your question, Rob. So how do we choose the word? So here's the thing about this. One of these words, we know what it is. The other one, we have no idea what it is. So, of course, this type of thing is pretty much impossible to prevent all the time. Because one of the words, we really don't know what it is, we're probably going to show insults. And it happens all the time. But for the other one, we try very hard to show things that we, for the one we know, that we don't think, that we think is not going to yield any insult when combined with something else random. So, for example, we don't show nationalities. Because almost anything that you put next to a nationality can be construed as an insult. So we don't put nationalities. So there's basically what we do with this is we do we make it so that the distribution is we have a large set of words and they're all equally likely. So these are for the one that we know, so that you can't attack it by always putting the. And second, we filter out. We don't put nationalities. We don't put anything offensive, etc. For that one word. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, my question is actually a
problem.
Okay. Why don't I follow up at the end?
Okay.
I'll come back to this.
You claim there's still a penis problem.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering whether as OCR gets better, because hopefully you're improving OCR at the same time, there's going to be a greater and greater difference, visible difference. And now you're telling me there's even a semantic difference between these two words.
Yeah, there is.
Easier for the 4chan kinds of people to attack it. Because
that's true. However, the distribution of these two is pretty similar in terms of, even if there's a large difference, they both come from books that OCR could not get. Actually, both are words that OCR could not recognize. So in that respect, the distribution should be the same. It is different because for one of them, we filter out, like... So for example, if you ever see an insulting word,
you know that's
the one that we don't know. Yeah. But we'd rather do that than insult everybody all over the place. Okay, any other questions? Yes?
So I'm wondering whether... So someone who wants to attack this automatically, could they... Look at the sort of the dictionary of words that you would present, and then start trying to figure those out as they improve their own OCR algorithms, form some prior on it, and then build it up. And
they may be able to do that. The dictionary of words that we present is pretty large, so they may be able to. So far, we have not seen that, and I guess we'll address it if we ever see it. But the dictionary of words that we use is pretty large. It's like something like. 80,000, 90,000, because we also have realized that we don't actually have to give you a word for the other one, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be a word. It just has to kind of look like a word. Yes?
Well, for speech recognition, typically algorithms use word co-occurrence matrices from corpuses. Could you use the inverse of that approach to choose words that would never occur together and then damn liberal does occur frequently. So,
uh-huh.
So you could actually specifically, it'd be an expensive solution, but specifically choose words that nobody would ever use.
Well, it's unfortunate because we can't quite do that because one of them we don't even know, we have no idea what it is. Sure. So,
yeah, that's
tough. I mean, we have some idea what it is, but it's usually wrong. Yes?
Are you limited to unaccented words in Roman alphabets?
Ah, good question. Yes, we are, but that's going to change pretty soon. We're about to release it in 40 languages. So, and we're going to know, basically we're going to let the websites tell us in which language they like the captchas, and we're going to give them to them in that language. Yeah. Yes?
How did you get the screen captures? I mean, these things go by pretty fast.
Oh, no, these are things that people have sent us.
So
Somebody complained.
Okay.
Yes. Like, for in this case, it was, in fact, somebody from johnedwards.com that complained. So they stopped using reCAPTCHA after that.
That was their biggest problem.
that was their biggest, it was the reason. Now, some of you are probably wondering this. Wait a second. You started by saying that humanity as a whole is wasting like 500,000 hours typing these annoying CAPTCHAs, and your solution is to double that amount of time by giving people two words instead of one. That's a very good thought to have, but you're wrong. Here's the thing. It turns out, this is an amazing thing, it turns out that typing two English words, which is what we're giving, takes equally long as typing 6 to 8 random characters, which is what previous CAPTCHAs were giving. And because English has patterns to it that we're accustomed to, it doesn't actually increase the amount of time. So that's good. Here's another number. This is the total number of people that have actually ever used reCAPTCHA to help digitize at least one word out of a book. So 10% of the world's population, so about 700 million people, have helped digitize at least one word out of a book using reCAPTCHA. This one's pretty funny. So remember, there was this article in the New York Times yesterday about CAPTCHA sweatshops. So there's people who pay, the spammers are paying people to type CAPTCHAs all day long. This is still happening with reCAPTCHA, CAPTCHA sweatshops, but now notice the irony of it. Okay, spammers are hiring humans to type CAPTCHAs all day long, which in turn are being used to digitize books. Okay, so we've turned spammers into good people. They're now bankrolling the book digitization process. So I'm very happy about that. And in this slide, I always like to present a conversation that we had with one of these people who owns the CAPTCHA sweatshop. We had this conversation with them about a year ago. And let me just show you what happened in this conversation. So here's what happened. First of all, somebody who owns a CAPTCHA sweatshop contacted us. We have an email account, and they contacted us, which is very weird that they did. But they started by saying this. Okay, so first of all, this was their first email. It said, would you help us find some CAPTCHA project? Now, when they said that, we didn't know what they meant because, we are a CAPTCHA project. We found us, right? but we didn't know what they meant, so we replied, what kind of CAPTCHA project are you looking for? And then in their next response is when we figured out that this was one of these people who owns a CAPTCHA sweatshop. They said the following. They're currently manually breaking a different type of CAPTCHA. They have the ability to type many CAPTCHAs every day, never mind his broken English. Tell us how we can help you. So, I don't see if you see the irony. I don't know if you see the irony here. This is like contacting the police saying, hey, I have a crime to commit. Would you tell me what to do, right? So it's very weird that this guy, he was very confused, clearly. But in any case, he was there, and he was like responding to our email. So we started asking him questions. I mean, why not? So we started just asking him questions. So he said, how fast can you type? We started learning about this guy. So he told us, personally, he can type more than 60 words per minute, but he has a big team. He can give us a lot of product. Then we asked him, does he mind that he's helping spammers by typing these things? And he said he didn't care, just tell me the details first. And so we asked him these questions, and then we asked him the question that we should have asked him from the beginning. And this is a great question to ask him. One of my students came up with the idea of asking him this. We said, how do you get around IP address blocking? So here's the thing. With reCAPTCHA, we know your IP address. And if you're a normal person, you type at most like 3 CAPTCHAs per day. I mean, that's a lot. If you're typing 10,000 CAPTCHAs per day, there's something weird about you and we block you. But somehow these people are getting around their IP address blocking. So we just asked the guy, how do you get around their IP address blocking? And he went and told us exactly how they get around their IP address blocking. So he told us exactly how they do it, and so now we can block them, which is great. But then, so at first I'm like, great, let's block them. But then we had this better idea. Why block them when they have this great resource at hand? So instead of blocking them, what we do is whenever we figure out that it's one of these CAPTCHA typing sweatshops, we just give them a different captcha. We just say, please type the whole paragraph. So we get them to... So for a while, this worked totally. I mean, they were typing entire books at a time for us. But they stopped after about 2 weeks. But it was very funny. Okay, any other questions? Okay, yes. How do they get around? Oh, yeah, they use some open proxies, and they told us exactly which open proxies they use. I mean, they told us exactly the IP addresses of them. Yes?
Just a quick question. So if you have a dictionary of 80,000 words, uh-huh, you're in one of two positions, and people have botnets out there of millions of computers.
Yep.
At some point, can't they just guess?
Yeah, they can. Uh-huh.
And that's difficult to catch, right? If you have millions of computers guessing three times a day, how do you detect
them? It completely slows them down, though. I mean, the main thing you want with this is just to slow them down. If they are, I mean, if their chance of success is 1 in 80,000,
right,
there's enough network resources and enough slowdown that at the time that by the time they're doing this, they're getting one account per 2 minutes, at which point we've done our job.
Okay.
I mean, you can't hope more than, if they're only getting one account per 2 minutes, it's success. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yes.
What's your guess about when OCR will be good enough to break captchas?
Good question. I don't know. And I'm going to guess that it's at least... See, here's what we're doing with reCAPTCHA. What we're doing with reCAPTCHA, notice one nice thing with reCAPTCHA. Even if as OCR gets better, we can still... not only do we screw it up, but as OCR gets better, there are less and less words that we give out for humans. We are always only concentrating on the things that OCR cannot get.
Right.
And to the point where OCR is going to be 100%,
right,
I'm going to say, I don't know, 10 years.
You run out of books first.
Yeah,
think.
This is my guess. I mean, people have been working on OCR for 40 years.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, that's another thing. I guess 6 months ago, Google actually bought reCAPTCHA, so now it is a Google property. So anything that I just said does not apply to Google.
Actually,
on to the next slide. Yes?
What's the business model of reCAPTCHA? You get paid by Google Books or...
Google Books gets paid by Google Books.
But
yes.
Presumably other companies are digitizing books as well. So
no,
they...
just for Google. So the business model there is they digitize Google Books. That's the business model.
So that's how you get the books now. How did you get the books before?
Before this? Before this, we were actually doing the New York Times. So we were digitizing the entire New York Times. And we are done with that. But we haven't delivered it for contractual reasons. But we are done with that. So we've digitized the entirety of the New York Times. Okay, any other questions? No. Okay, so if you think about it, what reCAPTCHA, let's see, if you think about it, what reCAPTCHA allows us to do is it allows us to reuse wasted human processing power. Okay, we've taken an activity where it just turns out that typing captchas, if you do the calculation, just in the United States, typing captchas, the average American spends about 1.9 seconds per day typing captchas. And we've shown how we can use at least a fraction of this time for something that's useful for humanity, digitizing books. But of course, people do many other things throughout the day. This is from a survey of 10,000 Americans performed by the US government. This is how Americans spend their day. Now, when I first saw this, where is work? That's what I wonder. I think it's other, or sleeping, or one of the two. But in any case, this is how people spend their day. What I want to do is I want to take another. What I want to do now is I want to take another slice of the pie. In particular, electronic games. Turns out that the average American spends about 1.1 hours per day playing electronic games, computer and video games. Of course, there's a high variance here. Some is 24, some is 0, but on average, it's about 1.1 hours per day. And what I want to do is I want to show you how we can reuse the time spent playing this. And sort of that's the next part of the talk and the next other big thing that I've worked on. And I like this statistic for this. It's that in 2003, 9 billion human hours of solitaire were played. So 9 billion. Now, just to give you an idea of how large this number is, let me give you two other numbers. First is the number of human hours that it took to build the Empire State Building. Turns out it took only 7 million human hours to build the entire Empire State Building. That's equivalent to about 6.8 hours of people playing solitaire in the world. Now, in case you don't think the Empire State Building is a monumental enough task, let me give you another number, the Panama Canal. Turns out it only took 20 million human hours to build the entire Panama Canal, and that's equivalent to a little less than a day of people playing solitaire around the world. So what I want to do now is I want to show you how we can make good use of these wasted human cycles. Okay. And basically what I want to do is I'm going to take a bunch of problems that computers cannot solve, and I want to show you how we can easily solve these problems for computers by just having people play games on the internet. Okay, and the first problem is this one. It's the problem of labeling images with words. So the problem is as follows. On input an arbitrary image, we would like to output a set of keywords that properly and correctly describe this image. Now, this is, in case you don't know this, this is still a completely open problem in computer vision and artificial intelligence in the sense that computer programs can't do this yet at all. Never mind the super evil, even telling you that there's flowers in here, not very accurate. Okay, so computers can't do this very well, but however, having a method that could accurately label images with words would have several applications in practice, one of which you've probably already seen, and that is image search on the web. So Google, for example, has Google Images. You can go there and type a word like dog and get back a lot of images that are related to the word dog. Now, the problem, of course, is that there's no computer program out there that can tell you whether an arbitrary image from the web contains a dog or not. So the way image search on the web works is by using file names and HTML text. So if you search for dog, you get back a lot of images named dog.jpg or dog.gif, or that have the word dog very near them. The problem with that method is that it doesn't always work very well. For example, in this page of results, this is the page of Google Images on the word dog as of about a year and a half or 2 years ago. It's been improved since then. But you can see that there's a guy in a blue suit right here. What the hell? There's a rabbit right there. So if we had a method such that for every image on the web could give us accurate textual descriptions of those images, we could greatly improve the accuracy of image search on the web. So what this is what I'm going to tell you right now. Is I'm going to tell you a method that can label all images on the web. And not only that, it's a method that can label all images on the web in a way that's fast and cheap. Okay, and how are we going to do it? Well, we're going to use humans, but we're going to use them, as always, cleverly. So the idea is the following. If I wanted to get a lot of people, basically get a lot of people to label images for me, I'd have to pay them to do so. But since there's a lot of images on the internet, I don't want to actually go and pay people to label all images on the internet for me, because that would cost, some estimates, several hundred millions of dollars to do. So that's not so good. So what we're doing is we actually have a game. It's called the ESP game. It's a very, some people think, a very enjoyable game. And as people play it, as a side effect, they're actually labeling images for us. That's the idea of the ESP game. Now, the ESP game has two very nice properties. First of all, as people are labeling images through the game, as people are playing the game, the labels that that we record from people playing the game are actually guaranteed to be correct, even if the players don't want them to be correct. Okay, so that's good. The second thing is, as people play the game, they actually label images very, very fast. And in fact, using a conservative estimate, I'm going to show you a little bit later in the talk, that if the ESP game is put on a popular gaming site, we could label all images that Google crawls in a few weeks, okay, for free. Okay, so that's the idea of the ESP game. Here's how the game works. So basically, it's a two-player online game, so there's a website. Whenever you go to the website, you get randomly paired with somebody else wanting to play the game. That's your partner. Now, you're not allowed to communicate with them. You're not told who they are. It's just a complete stranger from the web. Now, the goal of the game is for both you and your partner to type the exact same word, given that the only thing you two have in common is that you can both see the same image. Okay, so you can both see the same image. You know you can both see the same image. And now you're told, type whatever the other guy's typing. The other guy turns out to be a complete stranger. And it turns out that the best strategy for this game is to type words that are related to the image, because the goal of the game is to type the exact same word. Okay, so basically, at first, both players are going to be typing a lot of words related to the common image, until one of player one's words is equal to one of player two's words. They agree, they get a lot of points, and they get a brand new image. And now this label, this word that two players agree on, is usually a very good label for the image, because it comes from two completely independent sources, or mostly independent sources. Okay, so that's the basic idea of how the game works. Any questions about that? Yes? Ah, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. Yes, 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 yes. That's a very good question. One of the... So let me address that in about...
Because it is, in fact, an image of a penis.
Yeah, especially if it is... No, this is a very good question. Can I address that in about two slides? Okay, any other questions?
People can communicate, right? They can send each other messages. Can they send each other messages by keyword?
Or nope. No,
they
don't. The only they agree do you get to see it. Right. That's
they
right.
They don't get to select their part.
Right, but the question was communication.
If they're all over the web, of course, and you've got multiple languages.
That's a very good question. Yes, they do, but the site happens to be in English. So only English speakers show up, and so that's not a huge problem. Yes.
And you preserve non-matching answers.
Of course, we present non-matching answers because it turns out that matching has nothing to do with whether the word is actually a good word for the image or not. The only thing that matters is how many different people entered it. Matching is just a construct of the game. Yes. Okay. So that's the basic idea of how the game works. This is a screenshot of what the game used to look like. It's completely changed now. So basically, both players have a certain amount of time to agree on as many images as they can with their partner. Each time they agree on an image, they get a certain number of points. There's also a thermometer at the bottom that measures how many images the two players have agreed on, and if they manage to fill the thermometer, they get like a gazillion, million, trillion points. There's also a pass button, and another really important thing of the game is this thing we call taboo words. If you ever play the game Taboo, you should be able to guess what these are. These are words that are related to the image that players cannot use when trying to agree on that image. So in this case, for example, players cannot use dog or pillow or any plural or singular of these words. Now, where do taboo words come from? They come from the game itself. Okay, taboo words are words that two other players have already agreed on for this image, so we don't want to collect them anymore. And the nice thing about taboo words is that they guarantee that each time an image passes through the game, it gets a brand new, different label. The other nice thing about taboo words is that they make the game more difficult and therefore more fun. Now, talking about fun, you know, when I describe this game, it doesn't sound so much fun, but it turns out that a lot of people find it a lot of fun. So far, the ESP game, my version, now there's other versions of the game, in particular one that's run by Google, but my version of the game, with about 200,000 players, we collected about 50 million agreements. That means 50 million labels for images, and that also means that on average, each player played a lot, because there are 200,000 players, 50 million labels. There are also many people that still, to this day, play over 20 hours a week. And now, we also have had playing streaks of longer than 15 hours straight. So I feel a little bad about this. So by now the game has a mechanism that if you've been playing for longer than 15 hours, it will cut you off. And it's 10 hours if you come from a .edu domain. That's my contribution to education. over 50 million agreements. What if we wanted to label the entire web? Well, here's the calculation. 5,000 people playing the game simultaneously could label all images on Google in 2 months. Now, the striking thing here is that 5,000 is not a very large number. In fact, popular gaming sites such as Yahoo, Poker.com, or MSN average well over 5,000 players at a time. So if you put the ESP game on a popular gaming site, we could label all images on Google in just a few weeks. And now you may be wondering why hasn't this happened. And it just took a little while. But as of, you know, something like 2 years ago or so, Google actually also acquired this thing. It's called the Google Image Labeler. They acquired it. They changed the name to something significantly crappier called the Google Image Labeler. So now it is in there. It is in their site. I can't tell you, unfortunately, how many labels they've collected or how many images they've labeled, but it is a very large fraction of all images on the web, and that is actually being used to improve image search on the web. Yes?
How do you know when you're done with an image?
Ah, this is very cool. Okay, so now let me answer all these questions about like the images. So one of them is what is there to prevent? First, let me answer your question. What is there to prevent people from typing something like penis? Here's what we do. We actually, at random, some of the images that we give people are images for which we already know all the answers. So if they don't enter any of the answers that we already know, we realize that they're cheating, and we just don't record we record it, but we ignore it. And that fully stops all cheating, because it's something like 20% of the images that we give out are there just to test you. And that's enough to figure out that you're cheating. You also had the other question of what happens if the image is actually a penis. So this brings up the question of what happens with, say, pornographic images. This is a game. Ideally, we would not like to be presenting pornographic images in there. So here's what we do to stop pornography from being shown into the game. The simplest thing is whenever we crawl a page, we can see that words like sex or XXX or anything appear on the page, and if that happens, we don't show these images on the game. We also use the game itself, because most images are presented in the game, you know, something like 30 or 40 times a single image is presented in the game. But whenever it's pornography, guess what the first label is going to be whenever we present it? It's porn. That's the first label that's going to be. And whenever something gets labeled as porn, it gets manually flagged for review by my graduate students.
Sorry,
you had a question?
No.
Oh, okay. Any other one?
Talk a about the size of the namespace that you can and the limits.
Yeah, the namespace. So you're saying how many different tokens can we get?
Say that's in fact a frigate bird.
Almost nobody. So let me tell you. So the number of tokens that we can get out of the game is approximately 50,000. It's about 50,000 different words that we can get. There are definitely things that people cannot label. For example, an image of my neighbor will never get my neighbor's name in there because the number of people in the world that know my neighbor's name has got to be like 50. So, you know, 50 out of 6 billion, never going to get two people that agree on that. We can do some things to improve that. So one of the things that we are starting to do now is we actually, by watching you play, we can figure out roughly what you're good at. I mean, it's not exactly what you're good at, but we can look at your vocabulary and we can give you a lot of test images and we can figure out that, for example, that guy's really good with car images. Somehow he's giving you those very descriptive keywords for car images. So we're going to give you more images that previously got the label car. And if there's somebody else like that, we can pair you up with them. And eventually we're going to get much more descriptive images, labels. And that allows us to get very descriptive things, but still not things like the name of my neighbor. So I don't know if that answers your question. Okay, yes?
Could you say a bit about the economics of this? Is this intellectual property? Do you own the rights to the original? When Google buys it, what happens?
Oh, you mean for this game?
Well, for the first invention of CAPTCHA, was it patented?
So ReCAPTCHA was actually, so let's see. In the case of ReCAPTCHA, ReCAPTCHA was actually spun out as a company from Carnegie Mellon, and then Google purchased the company.
But what did the company own?
The company owned the company actually owned very little. It licensed everything from Carnegie Mellon with an exclusive license. This is clearly a law center, okay? I've never actually been asked this question. But yes, that is what the company owned.
But did they own a patent?
Carnegie Mellon did.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Carnegie Mellon still owns it, by the way. It's now just Google has an exclusive license, which it acquired through acquiring a company. Yes.
So why did you change the original design of ESP game? And after you changed it, did you notice any differences in population?
Are you asking about the Google design or my change?
The GWAP.
Yeah, we changed it. That's a very good question. So I didn't show any screenshots, but the ESP game looks completely different now. It now looks like Web 2.0. It has rounded corners, basically. that's what we did. The reason we changed it is so that it looked more modern. That's the sole reason. We actually saw a difference in the playing style, quite significant, actually. The players almost completely changed. It's funny. The old ones went away, and completely new ones came. So I don't know what conclusion to draw from that, but the players very significantly changed. Yes?
Looks like in the Google website, they put a lot of emphasis on you're going to help Google. Can you say anything concrete about whether people are more likely to participate if you say it's going to be fun or you say you're going to help Google label images?
This was done by lawyers. I mean, I'm sorry, this is the truth. This was done by Google had a very beautiful looking game, and the lawyers completely slashed it, and they said, we don't want to get sued, let's just say you're helping Google. That's what happened.
But it definitely reduces
people? Yes, it definitely reduces. For the number of, so one measurement is the number that of people that land on this page, significantly higher than the number of people that land on my page, because there's a link from Google here. But for the number of people that land on this page and become active players, versus my page, that land on my page and become active players, there's a factor of like one order of magnitude difference. It's like 10x. So, yeah. Yes?
Have you said anything about the demographics of the people who play?
Yeah. I can't say anything about the demographics of people who play the Google version, but I assume they're very similar. So for my version, it's very, very closely, almost evenly split between males and females. So it's slightly more females. It's about 52% females. The average age is 29. That's the average age, although there's huge variance. I mean, there's people who are 7, although maybe I shouldn't be saying that because we're like breaking some sort of law for people that are under 13 playing. But there's people who claim they're 7, and then there's people who claim they're, you know, up to 70. What else do you want to say?
Do you know anything about occupation?
I don't know about that. I actually don't know. Yes?
Did you answer my question about how do you know when you're done?
Oh, yeah. No, I did not. Here's how we know when we're done. When we're not getting any new labels.
Okay.
Once we've passed the image to the game 10 more times and we haven't gotten a single new label, it just means I don't. It's not that we fully describe the image; it's that the game's done. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to get anything new.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is great for public images.
Yeah.
But as cameras get cheaper, the number of non-public images is going to dwarf the public ones.
That's correct.
So, have you thought about games for semi-public or private images?
Yeah, this is a very good question. I don't have a very good answer. I mean, it's a very good question, though. I don't have a very good answer. Yes.
You browse other archives like Flickr, which already have tags and.
Yeah. So there's actually been comparison, both by my group and other people, between tags done by the ESP game and Flickr. They're actually quite different in nature. First of all, let me say, the number of Flickr images that have useful tags is a very small fraction. We're talking here, I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but something like 5%. So there's 95% of them that do not have anything very useful being said in there, because a lot of people just tag, like, you know, my trip to Argentina. And that's not a very, I mean, that may be useful in terms of knowing that all these were taken in Argentina, but it's not very useful for describing the actual image. With that said, once you restrict to the ones that have useful tags, the ones from Flickr are usually significantly more exact, because people know exactly what the image was about, whereas here you get a random person. However, they're significantly noisier, right? Just because you have no control. I mean, there's one guy putting one tag, which is meaningful to them and not to the rest of the world.
So those in Flickr, they're tagged by the person who posts the image?
In the vast majority of the cases, yeah. I think other people can tag them, but the... So in the...
Yeah. There's a question on that side.
Oh, yes.
Do you always play against a partner, or do you sometimes play against a partner?
That's a good question. We try very hard for you to play against a partner, but that's not always possible. The main thing is we don't want you to be waiting for a partner for longer than 10 seconds. So if we cannot match you with another partner for longer than 10 seconds, we pair you up with a pre-recorded set of moves, basically. Yeah. Yes? Yes?
What is the incentive to play the game? You had mentioned earlier that you need to pay people. So I was wondering.
Oh, no. Here we don't pay people. The incentive is because some people find it fun. That's the whole idea. Okay, let me move on. Let me show you some search results. This is what happens when you search.
A quick question about
yes.
The bots. When you play against a bot,
yeah.
Is it actually generating, or is it just sort of random and you say, well, after three tags?
It's generating pre-recorded labels that other people entered. Actually, what it is, it's in fact, it's not even doing that. Sorry. What it's doing is it's replaying somebody else who played before on that same image. So they, in fact, replay exactly at the same amount of time that everything. So it is as if you're playing with somebody else, just not at the same time. Yes?
Why a new game?
What do you mean?
Could we use an existing game that has a similar motive?
Ah, you're saying why bother making a whole new game? Yeah, no reason, other than we just couldn't come up with one that has existing, that was existing and actually did everything we needed. But you could use an existing game. Why not? Yes. Yes?
Google benefits from its version of the game. Who benefits from your version?
Nobody.
All those labels?
I mean, the research community, I mean, we give out those labels for free.
But if a museum wanted to use your game...
Oh, sure. We can probably do that.
Okay.
We're happy to do that, as long as it requires very little effort on our end. Sure. okay. So this is what happens when you search for labels using results from the ESP game. So this is for the query dogs. You can see they're all dogs. I'm scrolling down a page here, so you can see it's a bunch of dogs. More dogs. More dogs. Basically, there's a tiny dog here. But there's a dog. okay, so they're all dogs. The accuracy is very high. Here's another one. This is a search result for jail. Very good. Here's another thing that's very interesting to just talk about, which is how the guesses change over time for a given image. So for a particular image, for some images, the guesses remain the same forever. But for some images, especially the more culturally charged, the guesses completely change over time. And let me give you an example of one of these images. It's this image. This is an image of Britney Spears, in case you don't know who it is. So Britney Spears, this particular image, the labels have changed quite dramatically over time. So it's when we originally put this image on the game, maybe, I don't know, whenever it was, 5 years ago or whatever, the labels that we were getting for this image were things like Britney, correct? People thought she was hot. That's good. But then about 2 years ago, or whenever she started having her episodes, the labels that we were getting for Britney were very different. And we were not getting things like hot. We were getting things like crazy, because she went crazy. She went to rehab, and we got that. She shaved her head, and we got that. So we were getting labels, very different things. Or I shouldn't say labels, guesses. It's not necessarily that they turned into a label. It's just people were entering these things. You'll be happy to know that as of very recently, the labels that we are getting again are Brittany and Hot. So I think people started liking her back, which is good. Another thing that is that I like to mention in this is what people enter actually tells us a lot about them. So in particular, whoever entered the word Brittany 5 years ago, this was not true anymore, but whoever entered the word Brittany 5 years ago, statistically speaking, with overwhelmingly high probability, they were younger than 40. Because they knew what Britney Spears looked like. Whoever entered the word hot, guess what? It was a male. Okay. So by just watching what people say, they tell us a lot about them. And in fact, one of my students did a little thing where they, by watching labels of the ESP game, we can figure out whether they're male or female. By watching them play for 15 minutes straight on randomly chosen images, we can figure out whether they're male or female, something between 95 and 98% accuracy. We can also figure out your age within a five-year age range with about 85% accuracy by just watching what you type on randomly chosen images.
So your data for whether people are actually male or female, are there self-reports actually 95% accurate?
That is a very good question. That is a very good question. We've done this multiple times by trying to get the data either through a lab study or through the web. First of all, the self-reports seem to be about 95% accurate. We think that's where the majority of our error comes from. The fact that the data was trained with something that had 5% error. Okay, any other? Yes?
And this sort of brings out the fact that the labels that people are attaching on an image are not sort of purely factual,
no, they're not.
Objective things, but they're subjective and reflect some
yep.
have a cultural aspect to them.
Yep.
And then it leads us to wonder how the sample of the population is playing the game, who's playing
completely
the game, affects
yep.
the way that images on the web are being, you know, tagged and.
Yes, that is an excellent point. That is an excellent point. That's true. I mean, things that people are entering are not things that are actually factually correct. Let me show you this next example. So here's one. Let me show you some sample labels for this. This is an actor. His name is Walter Matthau, and he played in the character in the movie Dennis the Menace, and he was Mr. Wilson. Okay. And some of the labels that people have collected for this image so far are. Okay. So that first one is wrong. But when you look closely, it actually is really not that bad. But yeah, it's wrong. So this is the thing. By definition, these are what people think, not what's right.
It's what players think.
That's exactly right. On the other hand, this is significantly better than zero, which is what you would get from, say, a computer vision algorithm, or very close to zero. But yes, these are biased. Yes?
Does the system react somehow to the relevance of the photos? You showed the dog photos, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of them were...
Yeah. They're not. So this system, those results were not ordered by relevance at all. You can order them by relevance by doing the following. By looking at things, for example, how many different people entered the word dog for this image as opposed to just whether they entered it or not. So if 10 people entered dog versus if 3 people entered dog, then it's probably a more dog-like image than not. You can also look at order in which words were entered. So words that were entered earlier on are usually more relevant. So you can look at a lot of things. The results that I showed were not ordered by relevance, but you can get relevance from this. And also, if you were to include this in image search, you should use other things for relevance, not just this, like, you know, whether they come from a relevant web page, et cetera, et cetera. Yes?
So why not replace captions with this? This is more fun. You have a larger set of images. When you run out of books, why not? And people only fill out a few captions a day.
Yeah,
so,
we're going to do that.
Make them play a game.
We're going to do that. Not necessarily make them play a game, but make them basically do something like the ESP game. Yeah, we're going to do that. But first, we got to finish the books. Okay, so here's that image. Let me show you another one that now that we're on this topic. It's this one. I should say I have no political affiliations. I'm not even a US citizen. What I'm about to show you are merely the scientific results of what happens when you put this image on the ESP game. So some of the labels that the ESP game got for this image are these. Now, that last one. Can you imagine how awesome the two players must have felt when they agreed on that last word? Must have felt great. And that actually brings us to a question. And this is one of the reasons why people like the ESP game, and it's because they can feel a very special connection with their partner, especially when they agree on off-the-wall words like yuck for an image of President Bush. And it gets even better. A lot of the emails we get, still to this day, a lot of the emails we get basically imply that players feel a very, very, very special connection with their partner. People want to know whether their partners are of the opposite sex. People report that they like playing with partners of the opposite sex better than partners of the same sex. And people say things like, my partner and I, we look at the world in exactly the same way. Can you give me their email address? The good thing is, for once, we're going to actually make money with this game. I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. but it is true that people really do report like sort of falling in love with their partner. And this brings us to this question. Why is it that people like the ESP game so much? I mean, it's true that the game was designed to be enjoyable, but why is it that the game, so many people liked it? And to address this, let me just show you some of the things that people have said of why they like the game to us. So I'm just going to have you read. So this is what one person said. So this sense of the same. Let me show you, these are some of the other things that people have told us of why they like the game. That last one, if you think about it, it's completely unexpected, but if you think about it, it makes sense. It helps people learn English. You get an image, you got to say what it is in English. This also brings up the question, can we have the ESP game in different languages? And the answer is sure, we just haven't gotten around to doing it. Okay, so this is what some people have told us. Let me show you what some people have said in different blogs. So at some point, the ESP game was in literally tens of thousands of blogs. Let me show you one, a couple. Yes?
Well, I mean, if two people decided to use Perro for dog, it would still work.
So that's correct.
To stop it. It's just that you're not...
It's just that we're not marketing in there, and also, and it's also the case that the user interface is not in Spanish. So
I mean, there's nothing.
There's absolutely no technical reason why it shouldn't work, other than the fact that the user interface is not in Spanish.
Following up on that, have you developed models of how people adapt their belief of what the other person is going to behave with?
That's a very good question, and we have not. I mean, we have thought about doing that, like many things that we've thought about doing, but never actually gotten done. Okay, so here. Just show you a couple of things, let you read what some people have said. Yes?
Do you have any, is there any information about what makes, what particularly good players have in common?
I don't have any good, I don't have anything good to say about that. Yeah. Okay, so let me show you just, I need to wrap up very quickly. So just a couple of things that people have said in different blogs. I'm just going to let you read again. Sense of achievement, but the best is the way that this guy ends. Okay, so that's one person. Here's another different person, different blog. Okay, so this person actually likes the concept of the game. But again, the best is the way this guy ends. So not everybody likes their partner, and it completely depends on whether you do well with your partner or not. If you do well with them, you fall in love with them. If you do badly, you think they're an idiot. Of course, you're not the idiot. They're an idiot, right? Of course, not everybody has positive things to say about the game. Let me show you this email that I got about a year ago from somebody. Here's what they said. Okay. Okay. I don't know how to reply to this guy, but then I figured I don't have to. You see, he knows. Okay, so now I'm just going to end with this last little part, which is fluffy. Here's the thing, and this actually, I'm pretty serious about this. This is what motivates me and trying to figure out these things. So if you look at humanity's largest achievements, these large projects that humanity had throughout history, like building the pyramids of Egypt, these big things, when you look at the total number of distinct people that worked in them, it's very funny. It's roughly the same number for all of them, about the same order of magnitude. Of course, the exact numbers vary, but it's about 100,000. About 100,000 people worked in these humongous projects, building the pyramids of Egypt, building the Panama Canal, putting a man on the moon. About 100,000, okay? give or take a factor of two here. But it's about 100,000. And this is, there's a good reason for that. Well, actually, there's many reasons for that. But one of the good reasons for that is before the web, being able to coordinate more than 100,000 people to work on the same thing, that's tough. Right? How do you even communicate? Right? But see, now with the web, I've already shown you an example of one project where we've gotten 700 million people to work on the same thing, albeit, you know, for only 5 seconds each. But 700 million people can work on the same thing. So the question is, if we got if we got a man on the moon with 100,000 people, what can we do with 100 million? And that's what I'm trying to figure out with all these things. What can we do with on the scale of 100 million people doing something? That's what I'm trying to figure out, and that's the end of my talk. We have 5 minutes. Yes?
Have you thought about how to abstract this whole concept into a set of web services with APIs for people who post a game, play a game, have a whole collection of tokens they want matched?
That would be really cool, and it requires effort. Yeah, we're trying to minimize effort here. No, I'm just kidding. No, that would be really cool. We've thought about this, and it would be a really cool thing to try to do. We just haven't gotten around to doing it.
And then you could presumably scale it out to all kinds of problems.
Yeah. Now, I should say, for some of these things, I mean, you know, this, I have been doing this for 8 or so years. For some of this stuff, you know, maybe something like 4 years ago, the Amazon Mechanical Turk started existing. For some of these things, especially for the things that you don't need, you know, if you only need like 1,000 tasks solved, you should just get solve them on Mechanical Turk. That's much better. But for the things where you need something like digitizing old books, you couldn't do that on Mechanical Turk because it would cost you, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So for that, it would be good to design a game. But for things that are just much smaller in scale, you should just use Mechanical Turk. Why not? Yes?
You know, they collect all these points when they play the game.
Yeah.
What do they do with the points then? What do they, you know, what keeps them?
Nothing.
Yeah. Just points.
Just points.
Yeah, the name at the top of the list.
Yeah, that's all. Yes.
Okay, so one problem that companies like Nvidia have in developing countries is they want to use captures. But many people there either don't get the concept of what it is and what they should do with it, or think it's another password, or just can't read it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any thoughts or advice on what they can do?
I actually had never heard of this.
Oh, really? Okay.
I had never heard. Well, this is amazing. I mean, it has been many years, and I have never heard of. I mean, we've.
Yeah.
So I know from reCAPTCHA that. I mean, last I checked, there, we were getting solutions from something like 235 different countries. I don't know if there are that many countries, but different country codes. So we are getting solutions from everywhere in the world. So I don't know.
It's mainly people who haven't, you know, they're beginners to the internet, really. So they just don't, you know, get the concept.
I see. Okay, yeah. Yes?
Are there tasks that you've thought about doing that you really want to get done, but so far haven't been able to come up with a game or a framework for getting it done?
Yes. The best example of that is one which this is a thing we're working on, and we're about to release something, hopefully, in about 6 months. I started thinking about it in 2004. And for the longest time, we couldn't figure out, and it's language translation. So we're about to do that. And we are pretty certain that we have a very compelling system. And it's not a game that gets people to do language translation at a very large scale and for free and much better than computers. Equal quality of professional language translators.
Thanks, Royce, again. Okay.